And welcome back. Listeners to NPR and visitors to our website at stlpublicradio.org have been noticing something called the Tiny Desk Contest. NPR invited small musical groups or individual musicians to compete in a contest where they upload a performance to YouTube. The response was overwhelming with more than 6,000 entries. The national winner will perform in Washington, D.C., perform on a national tour, and appear on NPR's Ask Me Another. Here at St. Louis Public Radio, we hitched our wagon to the national project. In a moment, we'll hear from the local winner, but first, I spoke with arts and culture reporter Willis Ryder Arnold. I first asked him to explain the genesis of the local project.
Our version of the project came when Tiny Desk Concert, the NPR program, actually announced that they were going to do the whole contest again this year. And Kimberly, our engagement producer, actually decided that we should get involved and really make it a St. Louis-specific event where we could have locals vote on it and kind of organize what NPR does for us here in St. Louis.
What was the process for doing all of that?
So to get involved, basically, a group of us got together, Susanna Lohr, Brent Jones, Jess Luther, Kimberly Springer, who I mentioned, and Kelly, who works here on the show. And we kind of designed a way to gather all of the videos from NPR, design a system for people to vote on what they liked best, and set out a kind of package of rolling out band profiles, which would culminate then this week in the concert.
All right. But recruiting local groups to participate, how did that work?
Well, we basically all reached out to our different various networks. A lot of us are connected to the arts community here. And then we did a ton of social media sharing. We addressed bands directly. We sent out a lot of Facebook, Twitter posts, things like that. And then also reached out to people and said, like, hey, this is a really fun project we're doing. We'll be able to, like, host a concert. And bands seemed to respond really well. We had a high amount of submissions.
Well, and quite a variety of groups, or were they pretty much all along the same lines, the same genre?
It was actually a pretty wide, I was surprised personally by the amount of variety. We had everything from like traditional Americana groups and like bluegrass to funk bands to kind of like more experimental music to some electronic stuff and some just like straight R&B vocals.
All professional or all amateur or a mix?
I would say it's a mix, especially in St. Louis, where so many people have day jobs and aren't necessarily supporting themselves exclusively by their music. Some people are freelance musicians that gig with other musicians. Some people are, you know, business analysts that have a band as well. So it's really a mix.
Young, old, mix?
Young and old. I think that the range is probably from around 50 years old to probably 20. I didn't see any teenagers or really like elderly folks, but a lot of the demographic for this specific kind of NPR community is in the like 20s, 30s, and early 40s range.
And the winner is?
And the winner is Mount Thelonious.
That's reporter Willis Ryder Arnold. He talked with Mount Thelonious band members Ian Lubar, who sings and plays guitar, singer and violinist Alyssa Avery, and bassist Mark Wallace. Willis first asked Mark Wallace about how the band's early tours shaped its music.
Everything was kind of trial by fire. Everything was, well let's just, we want to book a tour. We don't have a booking agent. Let's just send out 500 emails. And you never know what you're going to show up. I mean, we went to El Paso and they forgot we were playing.
What happened in that situation?
In that specific situation, we didn't end up playing because there had been zero promotion done.
And zero people
so
there.
And there was no one there. And so we're like, well, we'll just call it a loss.
It's just like anything where it's, I mean, you almost need that experience or you need to know how low it can possibly get to actually appreciate when, you know, someone is appreciating your work. And playing for like, you know, 20 attentive listeners is obviously a very powerful thing. And it's more powerful having experienced, you know, 4 or 5 national tours now. That is entirely, you know, self-promoted and self-booked.
So what happened after El Paso? How'd you keep going?
Sure. I think we tend to get lucky in a way that I think we have little successes just when we need them.
Yes.
where we can have 3 or 4 kind of, you know, not so great, you know, turnouts or whatever. But something like this, you know, like this opportunity that you guys have given us, it just kind of gives us a new lease on what we're doing, and the local support allows us to do what we're doing. So go see live music. It actually means something.
So I was really curious, actually, how the local music scene has influenced the development of your sound.
We're really lucky to live in St. Louis, and St. Louis is a very affordable city, and it supports the arts a lot. So all of us, you know, make our living completely off of music, whether it's teaching lessons or gigging around town. So we feel really, really fortunate from that. And we've all had really amazing teachers and are inspired by many people in town.
Are there any, like, specific venues or shows that you feel like have been really part of solidifying what you do?
For me personally, in terms of, like, local influence, I think it's more along the lines of, like, teachers that have directly influenced, you know, like, certain people, like, when I was a senior at Webster, and I had a conversation with one of my teachers at the time, Paul DeMarinas, and we had this conversation, and it was about playing the music and honoring the music by playing it, not just playing it and being frivolous with it and trying to show off, but trying to be worthy of the song that you're actually playing. That advice is something that I try and directly bring, like, to the band. So, and Paul DeMarinas, he's taught, you know, how many generations of jazz musicians from St. Louis.
Yeah, and that, I think that in particular is kind of the three of us, like, our biggest uniting thing is serving the music and playing very egoless music.
So how do you actually, like, honor the music by playing it as opposed to just getting up and performing a song?
A lot of editing. Not only editing. I probably edit, the three of us probably do the most editing, and maybe to a fault when it comes to music. A lot of listening, really intense listening, trying to, you know, everyone has kind of instincts what they do musically, and sometimes that's just whatever falls into your fingers, what's easy to play on your instrument, and trying to be aware of those things and trying to figure out, well, is my choice because it's going to serve the music, or is the choice because it's easy? Things like that.
Trying to serve the greater good, or what music is asking for, taking the self out of the music, you know, trying to not service your ego, but try to service the project.
And also asking that question, you know, what does this song need? What is this song saying? What can I give to this song to make it the best song it can be?
Young and restless, full of life, I stormed through. A horse and settled down. What life was to me, I never knew. And it burned like fire from the sun. I'm the rogue warrior, the music spoiler. Let me corrupt your ears. I'm the night prowler, the full moon howler, and I'll be howling for many more years. I'm the rogue warrior, the music spoiler. Let me corrupt your ears. I'm the night prowler, the full moon howler, and I'll be howling for many more years. I'll be howling for many more years. I'll be howling for many more. Howling for many more years.
And so you actually played this song, Time. That was your submission to the Tiny Desk concert. How did that kind of process go into constructing that song?
That one was a little bit more straightforward. The arrangement is a pretty active song. So, and I think for things more active like that, I think it's easier for us to kind of take certain roles. You know, it's all about kind of keeping that energy. And I don't know, what would you say about kind of the composition?
That was at a point where we had just gone on a tour, I think, around North Carolina. For me personally, I think that was kind of the tour where we started to actually really find what our voice was going to be as a band. We got home and I felt really inspired to start writing music with this sort of voice and in my head of, like, you know, like, this was maybe not the exact idea of what the band's going to sound like, but a general idea of like, I can bring this to the band and we have this way now of arranging where we know how we want to represent ourselves, basically. I think that's a better word to use.
After the band develops an aesthetic, it's easier to just kind of play the character of yourself. If you're striving to create a voice, and if you feel like you're getting somewhere where you're creating a voice and something that's truly unique and your own, it's easier to just trust your instincts.
It sounds a little bit like that tour was kind of important. What were some of the experiences you had that you felt really helped contribute to developing the voice?
For me personally, it was this one experience we had where we were staying with some friends in this house up in the mountains, outside, like an hour outside of Asheville. We were trying to arrange a cover of Can't Help Falling in Love, the Elvis tune, you know?
Yeah.
And we were listening to a bunch of different versions of it, and there was like a certain feel that Mark and Alyssa were like, yeah, we should try and do it with this kind of feel. And I started, I think, trying to work out some kind of guitar part for it. And something clicked, and we were in this big wooden room, and Mark's bass sounded really awesome, and Alyssa's violin sounded awesome. Everything sounded really good. And we sat there for like a couple hours and just kind of hashed through this. And
there are definitely arrangements of certain songs that some, you know, I remember like that one in particular came together particularly easy. Other ones, I feel like, you know, it's taken a little more effort for various reasons. But that one, yeah, it just, you know, we knew the song we wanted to do. We had an idea of the style. The space we were in was gorgeous. We were in the mountains, which were gorgeous. All of that together like created this really kind of beautiful moment.
Wise men say only fools rush in, 'cause I can't tell falling in love with you. So shall
having that experience and what the sound that we created with that song, I was like, I want to start writing songs with this energy and this feel and this aesthetic. And that was really inspiring. And I decided to start doing this thing where I'd try and work on writing music every day. And my goal was to try and write one song a week for a year, which I didn't do. But I ended up getting to like 23 weeks or something. So I made it pretty far, which I was proud of. And I think a couple of those songs ended up on our latest album that we recorded.
And so how did you try and take that like energy and translate it from the Elvis moment to the record, to your live performances, and then to a video that you were submitting for a contest?
Right. Well, I think even before we record anything, like we get an arrangement down that we like, and then we play the heck out of it. We had been playing some of those songs for like over a year, maybe a year and a half almost,
yeah,
when we recorded. Like the first track on the album is called Word Grenades, and that had been arranged by the band a year and a half prior. And it had slowly evolved over the course of, you know, like three tours, basically.
Yeah, and I think, you know, when we choose songs for a recording and choose songs for a video, none of us are really like performers by nature. I think we could probably consider ourselves musicians first and performance second or third or maybe lower. So what we do on the video, what we're doing on the recording is really trying to capture what we do live or what we're doing in our living rooms and things. So, you know, kind of what is on the video is just kind of how we play when we, you know, there was no kind of trying to create anything. It's, you know, I think we would, whether the camera's there or not, we would play it almost exactly the same.
So then I have to ask, you know, you've already done an album, you've done a bunch of tours both nationally and played locally. What's next for the band?
We're going to continue touring. I think we're out this month even, out in Texas. Just, you know, keep grinding away and hope more people get something out of the music.
What would you deem like actual success for the band? Is this it, or is it something like more than
maybe going to Tokyo? not having to pay for the flight. How about that? That is
what going on an international tour without losing money would probably.
That's when we get the sheriff's badge.
It is kind of a weird thing, you know, doing your art for a living. You think about it very differently. There is, you know, we're not doing it for the money exactly, but I mean, it is definitely an important element of it because we'd like to pay our bills and we would love to do this all the time. We would love this to be, you know, the only thing we do.
So I hear the end result, like the goal would be live at Budokan, circa Cheap Trick style.
You're right. Yeah. We want 2 weeks at Madison Square Garden playing a full concert.
Now back with arts and culture reporter Willis Ryder Arnold. We're talking about the local winner of our Tiny Desk contest. The band Mount Thelonious received the most votes. Willis, what do we know about the derivation of the name Mount Thelonious?
So Mount Thelonious actually came from their shared interest in the jazz musician Thelonious Monk. He's somehow a deep favorite of all three musicians, despite the fact that they play this kind of Americana bluegrass inflected music. They really think that his spirit of improvisation is what they try and aim for in their music.
What did we learn about the talent in our community through this whole process?
I would say that it was a really impressive showcase of what St. Louis has to offer. Through the experience, we were able to find musicians that, like those of us who had set this up, had never heard of before, but were really impressed by. We were able to cultivate some local favorites, and we were able to pull from some of the better known kind of underground or local acts as well.
You know, sometimes the winners of contests like these aren't the only ones who win in the long run. Runners-up actually can do very well, too. What does that situation look like?
Well, actually, our runner-up was a band called Hazard to Ya Booty, which is a really great funk band, really fun vibe. They're the house band for STL Up Late, and they had a really fun kind of narrative video that they made. I did an interview with them as well. We actually covered kind of like how they created the song that they ended up focusing on the video, and that's actually a really great story.
We decided one Friday night that we were just going to stay in and we were going to write, just do some writing. And Ryan came to my back door, knocked. I opened the door, and he's already dancing and singing a bass line. So that was the bass line. So I said, keep doing that. We didn't even say hi or whatever. We went right into the basement and started recording and both writing, both contributing ideas. And it was a really true collaboration of us coming up with that song together.
It's really one of those moments where you can't quite believe that what this product came from and you know, how it originated would have ever, you know, whatever it was that happened at that moment, Pat had the foresight to say, don't stop this. Let's go now. Capture it now. It was one of the most organic processes that we've ever had in this band to make a song.
Do you find that members of these groups kind of come together pretty much the same way?
Yeah, I think that it really depends on how the group acts. I know one electronic musician kind of does all his work and then finds people to play with him live. But with the two bands that ended up winning, they're friends and mutually interested in the same music, and they really kind of bond over a love of music and then turn that into their own work.
And tell us a little bit more about their music.
So they really have this like fun, ebullient sound where they have a horn section, a strong bass line, a good beat. They kind of refer to it as a 60s funk soul band. I think we'll get a chance to listen to the music.
Let's do. know, the quality of that is really very, very good. Where are they recording these things?
I believe that they actually have their own studio that they're working on at the moment. I think that was actually recorded at STL Up Late's studio, where they shot the video as well.
Are there a lot of facilities in this area for groups like this if they want to make that CD?
Yeah, there are actually a number of local there are a number of local studios, people that have worked with national acts as well as local artists. I can't name any particularly, but throughout the St. Louis metro region.
And what about venues for them to play?
Yeah, there are a couple really great venues to play, everywhere from the Pageant to the Sheldon to down on Cherokee Street. There are places like Cherokee 220, as well as like Foam, which is a smaller bar and coffee shop. But bands that play in St. Louis tend to play everywhere.
Well, when you're talking about the Pageant and the Sheldon, you're talking about some pretty significant places to play.
Right. And a lot of local acts end up opening for larger acts or being kind of brought on to larger bills so that people can see kind of what St. Louis has to offer as well. The St. Louis music community is incredibly supportive here.
You are a relative newcomer to this community. What is your take on what you found here?
I've been pretty fascinated about the variety of musics. I feel like St. Louis has a particular flair for, say, Americana or kind of like country folk music, but that there's a lot going on in the hip-hop community, that there's a lot going on in the kind of like experimental new music communities as well. And where I get really excited is where I see overlaps through all of those kind of different groups of people.
Well, this has been a great success, this whole thing. Congratulations to you and the rest of our colleagues for having been involved in it. Thank you, Willis.
Thank you, Don.
By the way, we want to mention that Mount Thelonious held a concert right here at St. Louis Public Radio earlier today. You can listen to it at stlpublicradio.org.